May it please the court, counsel. My name is Elizabeth McClintock, attorney registration number 25990. I represent the defendant appellant, Todd Vitellio. We've addressed four issues in our opening brief. The first concerns prior bad acts evidence that was admitted against Mr. Vitellio concerning his profile on an adult friend website, past employment problems that he had had, and in particular about the past spanking of a girlfriend's child. I think we've laid those out in detail in the brief, and I believe that the argument presented in the brief is sufficient to address those, unless the court has additional questions on that issue. Okay. I'd like to move on then to the complicity issue. The jury was instructed as to complicity in this case, and from my reading of the record, I still cannot understand exactly why. The situation was we had a police officer who was acting as a fictitious parent, not as a 15-year-old, but as a fictitious parent who was basically holding out a 13-year-old daughter to other adults. In order for someone to be complicit with a crime, someone else has to have committed all or part of that crime. The jury was instructed on complicity, and from what I can tell, it wasn't just as to one charge, but all as to all four of the charges.
Can I stop you right there? Because that's a little bit unclear to me in the record, too. First of all, I didn't find anywhere in the record that would indicate who actually requested the complicity instruction and why. Is there anything?
Unfortunately, they did not record the jury instruction conference. My understanding from looking at it later, when there was a question from the jurors and the DA asked that they be instructed as to the complicity instruction again or directed towards that instruction, from that it seemed to me that it must have been the district attorney that had asked for it.
It doesn't really say that.
No, but I can't imagine why a defendant would ever ask for the jury to be instructed as to complicity, as it broadens the prosecution's ability to prove someone guilty of a crime.
And so, then related to what you were about to say, and I apologize for interrupting, on appeal, which of the crimes are you contending that the complicity instruction relates to? Because the only one that I can figure out is that it may have some relationship to is enticement, but I can't figure out how it would relate to any of the others.
I cannot see that it relates to any of the charges. If I had been the prosecution in this case, I would not have asked for that instruction. I don't know why they did. The problem is the way the jury was instructed, and why I've argued that it amounts to structural error in this case, is because they were allowed to consider complicity in regards to all four of the charges. They could have found him complicit in conspiracy to commit sex assault on a child, position of trust, solicitation of sexual assault, solicitation, conspiracy, enticement.
And attempt.
And attempt, yes. Which is very, very odd, because if someone's only attempted to commit a crime, the whole thing, adding complicity into this, put a whole other layer on all of these charges that I think probably confuses the jury greatly.
And then let me just ask, in the closing arguments, was anything clarified as far as the theories
of
prosecution or defense? Did anyone touch on the complicity instruction?
No, it wasn't until later when the jurors had a question, and it looked like their question went to the charge of attempt, whether or not the mother had to be the one that attempted, or if it had to be Mr. Vitellio that attempted to commit that crime. And the jury said, read the directions and specifically look, and he referenced the complicity instruction.
Well, back to Judge Lichtenstein's question, as I read the people's closing argument, they did talk about the enticement charge, and the theories that they articulated for why the evidence was sufficient had nothing whatsoever to do with complicity. They were, this guy did it. And so why, if that's the case, why does it matter?
Well, because in order for a trial to be structurally sound and for a defendant to be given his right to due process of the law and a fair trial, the jury has to be instructed correctly. And if they were given that complicity instruction, and we don't know, what happened in that jury room. We don't know why they found him guilty on these charges. They very well could have said, well, the judge says it's perfectly fine. If they're alleging somebody else did it, as long as he aided, abetted, or encouraged that crime, then we can find him guilty. We can't answer definitively one way or the other what instructions they relied upon. If they were allowed to consider complicity in regards to all four of these charged actions, then that is structural error. That's our contention to this court.
Let me clarify what you're saying then. So generally in a trial, if a complicity instruction goes to a jury, I mean, it's a legally permissible way to find a defendant guilty. Right. However, what you're saying is in this case, it was not a legally viable theory because the other person could not have committed the crime.
Right. The other person, unless the state is going to be alleging that this other police officer was going to commit these crimes or did actually have a 13-year-old daughter that she was holding out and was allowing people to solicit for sex offenses, and that is not in any way what happened here, that would be the only way complicity would come into play. Yes, we don't say that complicity isn't a viable way for someone to be convicted or for the prosecution to use it. In some instances, it's very necessary. However, not in this situation. Not where you have imaginary people. We don't have a real victim. We do not have a real mother. We don't have anyone else actually committing the crime and Mr. Vecellio aiding, abetting, or encouraging that crime. So complicity was something that should not have even been introduced to this jury.
But there was no objection?
There was an objection when the jury questioned.
But no objection to the instruction itself. So why don't we review for plain error?
Well, I would state to the court, even if you were looking at a structural or plain error, there was error here. It should not have been brought into play. And it seems to me the only party that brought it into play was the prosecution and the court, and the defendant should not be the one who is on the losing side of that error. But I would say, even it depends on which standard you would like to look at it, it amounts to plain error as well.
Counsel, can we eliminate the possibility from the record that we have here that the prosecution and the defense agreed to the complicity instruction, and it wasn't until the question that defense raised the first objection concerning it? We can't eliminate that, can we?
I suppose we can't. I can't imagine why the defense would ever agree to that or bring it into play themselves. That's the problem with situations like this where the jury instruction conference is not recorded.
But defense counsel at trial had the opportunity to make a record, right?
I suppose if he had known that they were going to argue complicity and that actually was going to be in play. He did make an argument later and said, I believe I quoted it in the brief or in the reply brief, where he had argued something, I don't even know why this is coming up, or something to that effect.
That's not a contention on appeal. The contention on appeal was that the instruction shouldn't have been given.
Yes, my contention on appeal is that this amounts to structural error. It should have never been given in the first place, because you never had a principal actor who committed all or part of the crime. He could not have been complicit with anyone else, because there was no one else.
Is that because the undercover officer didn't have the requisite intent?
Yeah, we didn't have the requisite intent. There wasn't an actual person who committed a crime. In order for there to be
complicit. But there was an actual person. The undercover cop was an actual person. The question is, did she not commit or could she not have committed the crime as a matter of law because she didn't have the intent?
Right. She didn't have the intent. She didn't have the means. There was nothing there to do because she did not have a 13-year-old daughter that she was allowing to be put forth for solicitation.
Was the undercover officer engaging in conduct that was constituting a crime?
No, I don't believe so. To me, it certainly seemed to be, in all of these internet cases, it's a very thin line that they're walking there. And in this situation, normally when I see these cases, it's someone who's posing as the child. In this situation, for some reason, they decided to step back and pose as the parent offering up the child. It's all of the statutes talk about whether or not it's an imaginary child. They don't talk about an imaginary parent offering up an imaginary child. It's one of the oddest cases I've seen, honestly, in one of these internet situations.
So, understanding, of course, that the undercover police officer did not intend to provide a child for sexual purposes. Nonetheless, the fictional person created, the persona created by the officer did. Mm-hmm. Now, please address the issue of whether there could be complicity with this fictional persona.
No.
Okay, well, why not?
There could not be, because a fictional person cannot commit an actual crime.
Is that an issue of factual or legal impossibility?
I believe that's legal impossibility.
And why?
Because if you do not have a person to commit the actual acts, there's no crime committed. I think there's always the distinction between factual and legal impossibility. In this situation, it's both. There is no person that can commit the crimes, the elements of the charged conduct.
In moving to conspiracy, if you accept what a lot of the states have held on the theory of conspiracy as opposed to the federal cases, that it's a unilateral theory, why do you even worry about it at that point? Because all you need is, did you have a defendant who believed that he entered into an agreement and committed an overt act in furtherance of that agreement? Why do you need to worry about complicity with respect to the conspiracy charge?
Well, in regards to Colorado law, we have never adopted either a unilateral or bilateral conspiracy.
Well, the Supreme Court has said they were going to leave that open.
Right. And I would say, judging by our case law that we have on hand now, that we are leaning more towards a bilateral conspiracy theory. A majority of states accept the unilateral conspiracy theory either. And every federal circuit looks at bilateral. From what I can see in my reading of the Colorado case law, we are saying that there has to be two conspirators. One cannot be a law enforcement officer and the defendant, or an informant and the defendant.
In a Colorado case, it says that before the enactment of the Colorado Criminal Code in 1971?
I don't believe so. Unless
I mean, after the Colorado Code?
No. All of the cases that I looked at for conspiracy talk about situations where you have an informant, and then another party, and then the defendant. We have not had a case that talks directly on point about a defendant and just a law enforcement officer. So none of the courts have had the opportunity to decide whether or not Colorado is a unilateral or bilateral conspiracy case. State, excuse me. If I could, I'd like to reserve my remaining 2 minutes.
Just under 2 minutes, thank you.
May it please the court, Madrid Yazdi, registration 36043, appearing on behalf of the people. The underlying issue for all three claims, complicity, conspiracy, and sufficiency of the evidence, seems to me to be the fact that we are dealing with a mistaken of fact situation on the part of the defendant. And it is clear in Colorado case law that factual impossibility and mistake of fact is not a defense to a criminal liability based on whether conspiracy, complicity, or enticement. In all of these, what is happening here is that the defendant believed that he was engaged in agreement with the mother of the fictitious child. That is the basis of both complicity and conspiracy. The fact that that person did not intend to commit the crime does not defeat the fact that the defendant intended to commit the crime. And what we have here is criminal attempt. Enticement statute in Colorado includes criminal attempt. So you don't have to have the committed crime in order to be convicted of enticement. So that goes to the sufficiency of the evidence for the enticement itself. And also entering into an agreement with the mother is the basis for both conspiracy and complicity. The case of Dar that I cite, and also the case of Sims, the 10th Circuit Court cases that I cite, both address this issue, that when the defendant is under the mistaken belief that the other person is an actual, is ready to enter into an agreement or is involved in the illegal activity, that is, as far as the defendant is concerned, it is not a defense to the criminal liability for the defendant. In Sims, we have actually exactly the same scenario, a fictitious child. The only difference is that we don't have the mother to be involved, so we don't have the complicity charge there, but we have the enticement, because in that case, the defendant was under the mistaken belief of dealing directly with the child herself. Here we have an intermediary, which creates the question and the claim and the charges of conspiracy and complicity.
Could the defendant here have been convicted of enticement under a theory that didn't include complicity? In other words, it just as the direct principal and actor?
I would believe so. Because you mean without basing it on complicity or conspiracy?
Well,
it was a criminal attempt to entice. The only difference is that instead of dealing with the victim directly, the child, there is an intermediary. So it is still enticement, but there is an added element to it or added claim, which would be conspiracy and complicity.
You need the complicity in order for him to be convicted of enticement?
I don't believe so. Because the fact that the defendant was trying to entice the child, even though it was through the parent, the presumed parent, doesn't change the fact that it was enticement. As far as the standard of review is concerned, it is clear that any instructions that involve, that do not deal with the fundamental rights of shifting the burden of proof, it is subject to constitutional harmless error, and there was no objection here, so I don't believe there's any basis for applying structural error. It is constitutional. It is constitutional harmless error if there was any objection, but as the court pointed out, there is no evidence in the record that there was any objection. The objection that was made later on was only with regard to referring back the jury to the original instruction, so it doesn't provide any basis for any original objection having been made. So plain error is the obvious standard of review. Unless the court has any questions,
I do have a question. So if it's your position that even without the complicity instruction, the jury verdict could have been supported under the theory that defendant was a principal to each of the offenses, how do we analyze that? If there was a valid way to support the jury verdict and there's arguably an invalid way, does it matter? What do we do when there's a valid way and an invalid way to support the verdict?
As far as the enticement charge is concerned, I think it is independent of the complicity, as I explained, complicity and conspiracy charges. But I'm not arguing that the conspiracy and complicity charges themselves, that if the jury, if, for example, there was any error in giving this instruction, obviously that would affect the conspiracy and complicity charges.
Well, there was no complicity charge. There are four substantive charges.
That was given, I'm sorry, the instruction for complicity. If there's any error associated with that, I agree with the court that it is, whether the jury based the conviction on complicity or not, is, from the record, it is not clear based on the arguments made in the closing argument. But as I suggested, it does not affect at least the enticement, because the enticement, whether it is based on the intermediary with the presumed mother or not, it is still supported. So we have sufficient evidence for enticement in either case. So any error in that regard should be considered harmless. But as a conspiracy, obviously you need the involvement of the other person to have the conspiracy. And I don't think complicity affects that conviction at all.
Because there's two separate arguments being made, as I understand it, with respect to, they're related, but they're different. With respect to complicity, as I understand the defendant's argument, they're saying that you can't have had complicity here because there wasn't another person who committed all or any part of the underlying crime itself. With respect to conspiracy, they're arguing it can't be a conspiracy because there was no kid.
My understanding, based on the opening brief, is that the claim for insufficient evidence for conspiracy is that there was no real agreement because the other party obviously did not intend.
That's right.
That was the basis. And again, I don't believe complicity, there's no way that the jury could have related complicity to conspiracy itself. That's a separate charge. And complicity is a theory that, given the facts of this case, can be related to enticements or criminal attempt to commit sexual assault, not to conspiracy itself. So to answer your question, the charge of conspiracy is not dependent on complicity instruction. An enticement based on the evidence presented is also independent of that because it doesn't matter whether it was through the mother or directly to the child, it was still an attempt to commit to entice the child. So in either case, we can say it is harmless, even if there was an error.
I want the same be true with respect to the solicitation charge and the attempt to commit sexual assault. Why does it matter that there's an intermediary there? If he was attempting to have sex with this fictitious kid.
Actually, I misspoke. Even for solicitation, it would be the same because it is the same fact that the defendant was trying to solicit, and it doesn't matter whether it's through the third party or directly. So we ask the court to affirm the defendant's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McClintock, you have 1 minute and 53 seconds.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor. I guess it should be clear. Yes, there is the conspiracy argument wherein we are saying that there could not possibly be a conspiracy because there was a law enforcement officer involved. There was no cloak of secrecy there. There was no true agreement. Therefore, there was no meeting of the minds, no conspiracy. In regards to complicity, I don't know for which crimes the jury considered complicity. They could have considered them just for solicitation to commit SAC, criminal intent to commit SAC, or enticement of a child. Or they could have considered it for the conspiracy as well. We do not know because we were not in that jury room.
Pardon me for interrupting, Ms. McClintock, but how can one be a complicitor to a conspiracy? Could you explain that for me?
I do not think that you can be. I do not think so. I mean, if I thought about it long and hard, maybe you would always have to be a co-conspirator in that situation. If you're aiding and abetting a conspiracy that is already ongoing, I would think that that would make you a co-conspirator in that, rather than just complicit in a conspiracy. There might be situations, but I don't have the time or the imagination to come up with them, I don't think. In this situation too, enticement of a child. This was not attempted enticement of a child. I actually could see the situation where the prosecution charged attempted enticement of a child because they were attempting to have somebody else do that.
But the enticement statute itself says you can commit the offense of enticement by attempting to do a number of things, persuading and so forth. So isn't the whole concept of attempt built in? You don't need to go to the attempt statute. It's right in the enticement statute.
Except the enticement statute later on talks about if criminal attempt is charged. So I think the legislature actually was contemplating that it should be charged as attempted enticement. And I'm over on my time. I think the enticement statute was enacted for the situation of somebody coming along in a car and trying to lure a child into a car. That is the exact situation what it was imposed for, why the legislature went after it. They did not contemplate having somebody over the internet saying, oh, I can get you this kid. And the way they are talking
about... Ms. McClintock, your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank
you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.